So, lawyers, entrepreneurs, chief executive officers, company secretaries, interesting individuals who are into aquaculture, anyone and everyone who's making an impact in Zambia somehow finds their way to Nkwazi Unfiltered. And today's no exception. We have a young lady who has been a songstress for the longest time, and she has indelibly marked herself in Zambia's folklore as far as musicians and singers go. She is a household name because we've sung along to her songs. You can't really define the genre of music she's into because it's just, feel-good music. There are moments where you feel like you're heading into a Roomba space. Every so often, you feel a Kalundula vibe. You feel a proper pop vibe. And then the next thing you know, soulish runs. And you're just like, oh my goodness. Is there a limit or a ceiling to this young lady? And today we're going to be talking to an interesting individual who has been in the music scene for the longest time, but it seems like just yesterday when you first heard her. And she's ever fresh, ever vibrant, ever fantastic, ridiculously talented. Of course, I am chatting with the one and only Salma Sky.
Oh, Kamisa.
Flattered.
Very. I mean,
Okay.
I know you're good at your job, but wow, what an intro.
No,
Thank
all from
you.
the heart.
Thank you
Genuinely,
so
all from the
much.
heart.
I'm
I'm a
so
huge fan.
humbled.
You know, I'm fighting the groupie vibes. Salma, Salma. I'll
Oh.
keep myself composed.
No, you're fine.
No,
You're
we're glad to have you here
Thank
today.
you. It's
It's
amazing.
we know you, but we really don't know you. You know, we see you on stage, we see incredibly choreographed performances. We've got dancers. I've actually been backstage and seen one of your dancers black out afterwards because
Oh,
they gave so much. And I was like, wow, that's commitment. And it speaks a lot about your desire to deliver. But quick question. Did you always know you were going to be a singer?
I think for the most part, yes. I think for the most part, somehow I was always going to push to pursue a music career. I've kind of always been like, okay, as a child growing up, and you're thinking, okay, I wanna sing. I'm listening to Mariah, I'm listening to Tamia, I'm listening to all these, and I'm like, oh, one day I want to be like her. But yeah, I think coming into my own and trying to find a career, I tried so many other things, and music just kept coming back. So I think from very early on, I was quite committed to kind of pursuing it.
So you tried to resist the call, but it just
Yeah,
kept pulling.
for
Now,
sure.
and we're all the richer and better for it
Oh,
that you did.
thank you.
Now, like I said, we know about you as a singer and an accomplished artist, but we don't know very much about you and your life. Tell us, who is Salma when she's not on stage wowing us with her performances?
Oh, I'm barefoot for the most part.
Is
Honestly, I'm barefoot
that with
and
a chitenge?
most 100%, and a t-shirt that you're just not letting go of.
No, I can't
You've had
unsee
it
it
for
now. Now I
years.
can't unsee that.
But yeah, no, just very, very diverse in just like my background, I come from such a multicultural, multi-religious background that for me, it's a little bit hard to like pinpoint one thing versus the other. Or, and I think that that's kind of made for a very dynamic personality, I
I hear
think.
you. I
Yeah.
hear you.
So one minute I'm very like, oh, okay, I kind of want to stay home and be a homebody, and the next minute I want to be hiking or trying a new hobby, or
Or being an iron warrior in
or
the gym.
maybe that. And so yeah, but I think off stage it's more just about me nurturing who I am, aside from being a musician. And that's just, I'm a very people loving person. Like I'm big on helping people. I'm pursuing that more now as well. Being a mom, never switching off on that one.
No,
Yeah,
that's a
parenting is just
24/7 job.
24/7. And yeah, just pouring into my family, my husband and I just navigating marriage. Right. You know, we're over 10 years now. We got over the 10-year mark. So hey,
a lifetime in Zed.
It is. And yeah, you know, I like to dance. I'm the type who every time it rains, I'm born in November.
Ah.
So.
Okay. Rain is you.
At the first sign of rain, I'm going to be the kind of girl that goes and runs in the garden. And
happiness.
Even at my age, I think my kids have made videos of me and they're like, Mommy's crazy. And I'm dancing in the rain.
No, they don't understand.
So there's a free spirited side to me that I think, you know, like beyond the glossy glitz of what it looks like in terms of packaging an artist, I'm just this girl sitting on the couch, just being me.
So we basically see a sum total of your influences, which some of which you've sort of hinted at.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that, because from what I hear, this is like a melting, you're literally a melting pot of cultures, religions. Tell us about your family background. Where do you hail from? Who are your people?
Yeah, my people. Wow. Yeesh. That's it definitely looks like a United Nations Sunday lunch. but yeah, I come from first generation mixed parents. So my father's half Indian, half Black Zambian, and my mother's half white English, half Black Zambian.
Ah.
So fortunately for me, I've got to experience all my cultures.
Right.
I've, you know, been brought up by my grandparents in terms of I've experienced them. They're not some far off thing that I'm imagining. I've navigated life knowing that kind of differences are things that have brought us together, as opposed to pulled us apart, because with family, you have no choice.
Nope.
You have no choice. So, it was an interesting upbringing, but one that I wasn't aware of at the time. I became aware of it later in life, where people would be like, oh, wow, that's your cousin, and that's your cousin, and that's your aunt. And wait a minute, because I mean, I present very ambiguous. So, you know, somebody would be like, oh, we just couldn't imagine that you'd be walking in with four different grandparents that look completely different.
Absolutely different.
And then, you know, of course, like I said, you know, multi-religious. I have grandparents who are Christian and grandparents who are Muslim. And even within the Muslim, even within the Christian circles, you know, they all had their different denominations. but one thing was, again, in growing up, there was just this sense of not drawing lines. And I'm truly grateful to my parents, because they actually made it even more of an enhanced way to live. In my grandparents' time, of course, there was, you know, it was a more difficult time to be in an interracial marriage. My parents had to grow up, I suppose, with the brunt end of some of that. They learned and did better when it came to raising us. And I think they empowered more of, well, think of it as opposed to somebody saying, well, you don't have a village, for example. Because I'm so many things. Walk through life saying you have four villages.
Exactly. The best of four worlds.
And so that was something that they really like made us embrace. And that's why I said, like, I didn't, so coming from an upbringing like that, I didn't notice the differences. Because I was already programmed by my parents to know that, oh, it's just people are just people. And so I enjoyed that very much about growing up. The world has taught me otherwise highlighted otherwise, but it was a really beautiful upbringing, and the same goes for faith. I mean, I'm a born again Christian, but my parents, I'm especially coming from a Muslim father, the expectation is that you have no choice. There's a stereotype to be like, oh, it's very rigid.
This is you
have to follow through. But my parents were like, they will find God, and they will make decisions on their own. And yeah, you know, so growing up, I was kind of, I think that the free spirited side of me comes from that kind of upbringing where there's like no limitations.
So a nice liberal environment where you're told, dream and go off and chase your dream.
For the most part, yes. Yeah, I'm really fortunate in that sense.
Yeah, it would explain why you're a people person, because obviously there's adaptation to learn how to deal with the different cultural norms of each of the different groupings, and to be able to fit right in and find your sweet spot and just be comfortable in that.
Yeah.
That makes you ready for anything that comes your way, and also anyone that comes your
way.
Right, yeah. Interesting, interesting. And in terms of school, what was your school experience like?
Well, I did it all again. I started off at a trust school.
Right.
Nkwazi.
Aha.
And I know. And then we moved to LISEF.
Ah.
So I got to experience, you know, Islamic learning.
Right.
As,
right.
you know, and as an institution. And then I went off to do my secondary school at St. Mary's Convent School.
Okay.
And got a dose of all the Catholic goodness I could get. So I've enjoyed my schooling because, again, it was very easy for somebody like me.
Right.
To assimilate and adapt in those situations. Because at home, I was already, you know, kind of primed to be able to know what it's like to wear a scarf and then know what it's like to have Christmas.
True.
You
true.
Know, yeah. So.
Know what it's like to show your shoulders.
Yes.
And know what it's like to be covered all the way up to your
and where it's almost wrists. Like second nature to do it. I don't overthink it. I just know.
This is what's happening. I've got to do this.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, yeah. And then after that, like I said, you know, music has always called me back, but I pursued a few things, you know.
I've got
my qualification in teaching and training.
Oh, nice.
I pursued psychosocial counseling.
Ah.
I did a little bit of education in special needs.
Ah.
And then, you know, tried to follow the footsteps of some greats in my family when it comes to fields. And I pursued law for 2 years.
Right.
But I realized I didn't have the stomach for
it. The shark in you. You know, that means
so, no, I'm too much of a people person for this. I've most recently re-qualified as a mental health practitioner.
Oh, well done.
And that's, yeah, just purely for my passion for people and wanting to be in the people helping business.
Overachiever. sorry, I just sneezed. Yeah.
Small, right. You know?
With lots of modesty. And just recently, we hear you. But with regards to family, I know we've heard about grandparents and parents, siblings. How many and where did you fit in the equation also? Because there's always that sibling who we've had people claim, no, I was a good child. And then we've heard it on very good authority from relatives. Ah, that one was lying. He was a menace to society. Yeah, so let's be candid here.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you. I've never been spanked. I was the child who was doing everything to stay out of trouble because my two older siblings showed me that, hey,
things can go south.
Yeah,
in a hurry.
No, I don't think I like that whole slipper thing. No. It's not for me. I also was, I've always been really petite. So I was a really tiny child.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't like trouble. I didn't go looking for it.
So you were averse to trouble.
So very, very much so.
Pick up the phone and call your dad. Would he vouch for you?
He'll tell you one time.
Ah, okay.
I never got a spanking. Nkonyo, maybe, you know.
Uh-huh.
And funnily enough, it was for like not saying my times tables properly, you know, because we had this rigid thing.
Oh, yes. No,
about
to,
like,
oh, yeah,
don't man. Give me excuses.
You've got to
I'm so grateful for it now because I can.
Yeah, no. Oh,
quick add.
You have to.
Makes me good with my money.
Yeah, no, that's old school.
Yeah,
old
but school. not mischievous.
Okay.
To the degree that I never snuck out. You know, waited my turn and I just had it. But it, you know, it says a lot about the parenting that I got. You know, my parents were like, well, if you want something, just kind of. And I saw my older siblings test the waters. So I'm the kind of, I was learning through observation. I was saying this.
So learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah.
Let the other people make the mistakes. Yeah. And then, okay, that thing burns. Okay, steer clear.
But we're a family of four. And I had an older brother. He's late now. But and then an older sister, and then I'm third. Okay. And then there's quite a big gap between myself and my younger brother.
Okay.
So maybe to an extent, I was a last born for a little bit.
Right. And how did you deal with moving from being the little princess to, suddenly?
I was quite keen to have.
So you didn't enjoy being the little person in the house?
My parents weren't really like, you didn't make me feel like a kasuli.
Really?
Like, not really. I don't recall it being so. I see some people and I'm like,
like living the good life.
I think to be fair, my husband and I don't treat our youngest that way as well. She's still accountable for her behavior. Oh, and, you know, we try to. Whereas some people, there's a stark difference and you're like, don't leave him.
Kasuli can do no wrong.
Yeah, no. I didn't really feel it.
Right.
But I'm sure there was a level of protection for me. Yeah, I just didn't.
But they were subtle about it.
Yeah. Nice. And I was just there sucking my thumb until 19. No.
Okay.
No. One day, at 19 years old, I just realized I wasn't doing it anymore. And I was like, is it the fact that I don't want people to see me as a child anymore?
I want to grow up.
But But
did you get that whole difference?
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Thumb suckers have a really skinny thumb.
Yeah, I did. But I mean, it's been so many years now, so I think I've evened out. Yeah.
What's your most exciting childhood memory?
Oh, wow. Like I said, I feel for me it's getting together as family.
Yeah.
And I thought it was like, you know, now I even appreciate it more because, you know, when you have your own family and, you know, appreciating the people who are like glue, you know, people like my grandmother, you know, my uncles, my father himself, you know, they're people who are meant to be in the family to kind of keep traditions going.
Yes.
And yeah, I always used to think, I just like romanticize this thing about it just being a childhood memory. But it stays true even today. Like I feel like those are, when I see my family get together in as many of us that we can pull together for something, I get that same feeling even today.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it was just the ability for us to all just like drop everything and just come and be together. It was a very big thing for us because it's Sunday lunch was non-negotiable.
You had to be there.
Yeah, we had to be there. And it wasn't Sunday lunch just as a nuclear. It's an extended family Sunday lunch. And so my whole childhood was that, you know, up until I think just a few years into my marriage.
Right.
When my grandmother passed, and then it was like, okay, she was, and that's why I said, like, people who are the glue.
Yeah.
So, you know, my uncles and my dad, they're, you know, trying to kind of keep that going. And we do have our traditions that are still there, that were there from when we were kids, you know. Another one is New Year's Eve. You know, New Year's Eve was my grandfather's birthday.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's my son's birthday too.
Perfect.
But yeah, we used to go over to the farm and kids, dads, moms, no one was safe at midnight.
You're getting drenched.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's a good tradition.
The balloons are filled. Things are happening from 21 hours. You're just like, people are looking a bit shifty.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Who's brought so many water balloons. You don't know who's bought plastics because they couldn't find the balloons. You don't know how many buckets are being filled. And so it's traditions like that. Like even my father, they'll still literally run. People will be running all over Jesmundine. And they're coming from my father's house because we're chasing each other.
Chasing each other.
Oh. Yeah, up to today. So I'm looking forward to
yet another one.
Year's. Yeah.
Now, that's what keeps us grounded.
Yeah.
You know, if you can stay young for as long as you possibly can, yeah, there's something about that that just keeps invigorating and recharging you. And that speaks a lot about support systems. So I hear from what you're saying, you had lots of support from family. Outside of the family support system, who else?
I'm big on my friend groups.
Right.
Yeah, I love community. I've found that, you know, all my friends are people I've known pretty much my whole life. Yeah. You know, my friends come from at least secondary school.
Oh, impressive.
First year secondary school. And, you know, I'm not such a young woman anymore. That's a long time ago.
go on. If you
insist. That's a very long time ago. So, I mean, yeah, for you to say you have friends who are your, you know, newest buddy is 20, someone you've known for 20 years.
Right.
That's a long
that's
time.
That's impressive.
So I've grown in terms of my support. You know, it's one thing to have a friend at 13, or in your, like, for in my case, my parents are getting divorced, and those are the same friends that I have now.
Right.
When I'm getting married and I'm having children. Yeah. And I really appreciate the fact that I've managed to keep such long-term friendships. I came to faith later in life, so I haven't really had a, you know, a faith-based community until I was an adult.
Right.
Like church community is big for me. But I would say, my friend group is actually my second family.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I read something quite interesting just today, and it said, we meet people for a reason, for a season, and when we're really, really fortunate, for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And clearly you've got a little box of people that's just full of lifetime friends. And there's something really beautiful about that, because they know you for you. They were there at the ground floor, you know, when, it's fashionable to know Salma Sky. Hey, selfie. I'm with Salma Sky. No. Like, hey, you mean Salma? We were sharing a packet of popcorn from the tuck shop. That's something you can't pay for.
No, you can't
buy that.
Yeah.
And you touched on something quite interesting. You say when your parents divorced, how old were you when that happened?
I was 13, turning 14. Again, like, my mom is the most, like, non-fussy person.
Right.
I think if it comes to anything to do with just being like, oh, okay, it's just kind of, you know, let's not complicate it. And so I think for her, and, you know, to be fair, my dad to a certain extent, but my mom more so. And divorce is never nice.
No.
But I can't put it in words other than saying that I am really grateful for the way they did it. Because it was not messy.
Okay.
There was no trouble other than for us emotionally, what we'd have to navigate. Because, you know, it's normal for you to feel something.
True.
But no issues. So I always say, like, we had the smoothest.
No animosity. And
there was nothing for us to even be like, oh, it kind of was just like a change. You know, maybe for the older children, but for me, I mean, I was already 13. I didn't get any inkling that it was going to happen. I didn't suffer any exposure to, you know, kind of like the issues that were going on.
Right.
So it gave me that sense of like, okay, this is maybe subconsciously like, oh, this must be for the best. Some, you know, like,
it's happened.
Yeah. And yeah, my personal experience, and every child is different, but my personal experience has been, well, like anybody, I'm sure they all kind of fantasize like, oh, what would it be like to, if they stayed together? But I didn't have a very negative impact to them splitting up. It was a good conversation. I was old enough to understand.
Right.
And, they partnered very well and still do. They still partner very well in raising us still,
yes,
because
yes.
the job never ends.
Mm.
But also just partnering even as grandparents now.
Right.
So yeah, I commend my mom and dad because I think that they did a really great job at least on their end, trying to make sure that it wasn't messy for us. And then how we reconciled our emotions about it, I guess, is, you know, child to child.
Everyone dealt with it in the best way possible.
Yeah.
Did you see any impact on your other siblings?
I feel like we've all kind of questioned whether how much we've been impacted by divorce.
Right.
I can't speak for them. Mm. But, you know, I have had a conversation with my younger brother because I think for him, I was more curious that he was a lot younger and what he experienced could be quite different from us three because we were closer in age.
True.
And, you know, I guess he's kind of, I just haven't really known any different.
Like, this is like.
Yeah, especially when it happens younger. I think there's that sense. But I think also for him more on the like, I'm just curious, like what would it have been to have experienced 10 more years with them being together?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, maybe it manifests in our own relationships. Like I know for me personally, I didn't have a terrible experience with the divorce.
Right.
But I do know that I wouldn't want that for my children, no matter how nicely we did it.
Right.
So there are elements to me I know that subconsciously are influenced by that.
Yeah.
And, you know, more so now. I mean, I was not a believer then. I'm like, there are different things that kind of make me make the decisions I make.
True.
And yeah, just, I suppose, you know, like marriage is work.
It is. It is.
So you don't always get the answers, especially in our setup about why and how, you know, things happened and could have been done differently.
Right.
But it does make me want to search more in my own relationship.
Right.
To be able to dig deeper. And sometimes, you know, you'd be surprised, like it could have just taken a little bit more conversation and.
True.
And maybe I'm just from a different generation as well now where it's like, you know, some things were left unspoken, you know.
Correct.
Now TiVo and I are like, let's get to the nitty gritties.
Bring out the microscope.
Yeah. So I think that's, in terms of impact, I feel like, especially for me, that's something that I take away from it. I'll do the work and... It's not always easy, but I'll do the work.
Do what you must.
Yeah.
I hear you. Yeah. Speaking of doing what you must, you ventured into various career paths. Mm. And one thing you didn't point out is that at some point you dabbled in modeling.
People always say this. I just got a little bit of, you know,
a little bit of camera
work.
Yeah, you know,
a few shoots. No, I think... you know, I worked for a jewelry company, the Jewel of Africa.
Right.
And I happened to be the face of the company because at the time my employers were like, you know, do you want to model the jewelry? And I was like, okay, you know.
May as well.
okay. You know, and I did it. And it was kind of within the same period that I started singing professionally.
Okay.
So I feel like there's this relation that I was on billboards before my first single.
Right.
And that people associate me with being a model, but I never really was. So I had this FaceTime that was about something else, which was, you know, in print.
People knew you for
and then it's like,
she's
gone from, isn't this the girl also from?
Exactly.
So when I came out the first song and they're like, this is the lady singing Kapiti Piti.
They
were like, but isn't she the lady?
Yeah, we know her.
So she's gone from modeling to, and I'm just like, it was a very short...
You know,
stint within employment. But no, not really. I mean, I like to take a good picture now, of course.
We can tell. The poses are quite on point. you know, it's the sizzle. I'm like, we see you. So clearly you learned a lot.
Yeah, and I think actually my music career has made me more of a model than my modeling career, like, you know, kind of came the other way around.
Right.
Because, yeah, then I was like, oh, no, now you have to do a photo shoot. I'm like, oh, okay, let's do a photo shoot, you know. But, yeah, I think that's where the kind of like the whole modeling thing.
Yeah. Now, you are the definition of a power couple.
Oh, you
and your husband.
Thank you.
I know for a fact he's a very creative individual.
He is.
Then you go off and you two creative individuals decide to get married. And then your universes collide. And I've seen the collaborations. I've seen them direct.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of your videos, if not all. Yeah, I've seen him render support backstage and a very detailed individual.
He is.
Is he that detailed even at home?
He is very detailed. I know that in everything he's kind of thinking further than what everybody is thinking.
Right.
And it's a great thing. I mean, I'm my free spirited side is like, oh, let the kids jump on the jumping castle, or like, yeah, let him backflip off the wall type thing. Or and Tivo is like, but you don't see what's coming.
Yeah, balance. Yes. Yeah, safety first.
So that ability to like critically analyze situations is beneficial. That amount of detail is beneficial even in just life, because now we balance each other out. He's like, Salma, that is too dangerous.
Like, don't
let them do that. The children have ended up paralyzed doing those kind of things. But yeah, his attention, like his eye for things, you know, when it comes to the creative side, which is truly who he is.
Right.
I think like that's something that is a superpower for him, you know. And I just hope that that's something he carries through with everything that he does, you know, whatever he endeavors in. But yeah, creatively working together, you know, we've had times where we're like, no, I think it should be like this. And he's like, yeah, but if you do it like this, just add the...
Who wins and those debates?
You know, to be fair, I trust Tivo with so much. I have trusted him with so much when it comes to like the creative output.
Right.
Because he's an expert.
Yeah.
And one thing I would do, I like the easy life. Life of convenience. If I don't have to think about
it. Do the heavy lifting.
Let the technocrat do his job.
Like, do your thing. Do your thing. Do his job.
And then I have the benefit of being a wife, that when the whole crew has left and whatnot, I'd be like, now look, you see, I told you you're supposed to have done it. Now look, the red is too red. And, you know, like, why? And that's, I suppose that's the nice part of working together as a couple, is that you can, and you learn to regulate yourself as well.
Correct.
You don't always get it right, but I think for the most part, if you trust each other, you know, he's also somebody who's like, oh, okay. When it comes to my career, you know, he's always been like, well, okay, what do you want to do? What's your vision? And then just try to refine it according to his expertise. But yeah, he's a very, very detailed individual. He wants to get it right.
Just right. It's got to be right. It's got to be right.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you meet though?
Well, we always try, the kids ask us all the time.
Mm.
And we're like, well, we knew each other socially for so long before we actually started dating.
Right.
So we don't have that story where it's like, oh, you know,
So you just escaped from the friend zone.
No, he made his intentions known after seeing me kiss a few frogs. Then he was like,
I think
you need a prince. But no, we knew each other socially for a very long time, almost 10 years before we started dating.
Oh, wow.
So I always knew, oh, there's Tivo. He always knew there's Salma. But he always tells the kids the story about how he first saw me and I was having coffee with my dad.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, you must have been quite young at the time, but you were there having coffee on a weekend with your father at Vasily's.
Wow.
But old Vasily's.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, no. And then he was like, yeah, something about that father-daughter relationship made me feel like, oh, maybe, you know, a girl her age is taking her time out to do coffee with her dad. Like, it's not really... Yeah.
No, you don't see that very often.
Yeah, like, most girls your age are like, oh, drop me at my friend's house.
No, it's uncool to be with your dad.
Give me money. I want to go and hang out.
Yeah, I don't want to... Dad, you're cramping my style.
Yeah. Mm,
the usual.
So I think that was the little sprinkle that made him feel like, oh, let's see how she turns out.
Yeah, and this is an interesting
She
one.
Might, if she has that, then she'll... When I have daughters with her, she, you know, I'll get that good relationship with my daughters. Yeah. So
as a sniper.
Yeah, as a sniper. And yeah, and then we got together. It was very like, we're at that point in our lives where it's like, oh, okay, I think I've been your friend.
Yep.
We've been very well acquainted for many years. Of course, we spoke about music often, both being creatives.
Yeah, obviously. Obviously.
And then,
conversation starter.
Yeah, and then he was like, you know, okay, like, are we, this is, you're single, I'm single.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
What are we doing?
Nice.
And my response was like, well, you know, what are we really doing? You know, I think from a woman's standpoint, it's like, yeah, you can ask me, what are we doing?
But
are we hooking up or? Yeah,
what's?
Yeah, I want to know, are we in it for the long haul?
Yeah.
So from the time that we kind of first declared interest, I guess, and it was no longer just us being friendly. It was very soon after where we had the second conversation, which was like, are we courting?
Yeah.
Is this,
like, what is this?
The intention for marriage?
Yes. Is this prim and proper?
Yeah. So we got engaged very quickly in that sense. Mm. And then, of course, you know, through the families and whatnot, more officially.
Yes.
But it was very much from the beginning, like, oh, yeah, I'm not trying to date anymore. Mm. I've seen the world. I'm not interested in that. When I'm speaking to you, I'm speaking to you about...
I'm here. Yeah, this is us.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, and, you know, the rest is history. 4 kids later and, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, I see your face lighting up as you talk about this. You're still
it's blushing. Always nice. It's refreshing. He's going to get the best out of me after this now, because every time you talk about your marriage and you reminisce, you kind of get a renewed sense of how far you've come. So, yeah, I enjoy it.
Serious brownie points. TiVo, hope you're watching. Yeah, well done. Well done. Well done. Salute you. Yeah. And when you're not being creative, what's your outlet? What's your vent? Because I know creatives have to find something that is completely opposite to what they do regularly. Because obviously you're thinking lyrics, you're thinking beats, you're thinking, okay, they have a breakdown over here and then into the bridge, key raise. But then when you're not thinking about that, what's your outlet?
Exercise.
Okay.
Yeah, exercise.
That is a good drug.
The exercise and my mental health work have become something based on my own experience. After my fourth child, I became very physically insecure. I've never had an issue with my weight. I've never struggled. I mean, people will always comment. People always say, and especially if you expose yourself.
Right.
Oh, she's too skinny. Oh, she's this. Oh, she's that. Oh, she's, you know, you're never enough, especially when you have exposed yourself that much. Like I said, you know, you're in the public eye and people can comment and you can see those comments. And it never bothered me. It never bothered me. But it might also have been like, you know, women kind of go through their own processes. And like in my later 30s, could have been a combination of things. It could have been hormonal. It could have been.
Right.
And I just was like, oh, I don't feel like myself anymore. Mm. And it became this very like obsessive thing that I need to kind of work on my body, you know? And the safest way to do that is through exercise. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to build muscle and I want to, like, you know. And I mean, you know, I'm somebody like, you know, after I've had my children and I'm nursing them, I shed off everything. And I'm very fortunate in that sense.
Right.
But again, it might have just been physiologically at that age. I lost a lot of weight.
Mm.
And that hit my confidence quite a bit. And it's the first time I kind of felt what depression feels like.
Right, right.
And ever since then, I've been a bit even more passionate about mental health, especially for women.
Right.
So, right. Yeah, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to go into the gym. And so it started off as something for me to kind of heal myself.
Right, right.
And I worked with a female trainer first. And she, one thing she told me is like, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Right.
Because if anybody's right. done exercise before and oh, they're, yeah. especially if you're, you know, you're trying to achieve something, like even with guys, you know, you're like, let me just go and if I do weights for 3 months, I'll be
buff.
No. And then you find yourself, because of how much you're training and the shock that your body is taking, you actually shed
because it's burning. You're burning muscle and the little fat that's sitting on.
Yes, so the burn off. So I became smaller before I became bigger. And I was like, oh my God.
This is going the wrong way.
But the mental fortitude to be able to get through that
right.
was like, okay, yeah, this is something that I see. The vision. And I suppose it's kind of like a practical lesson I put in life in different areas as well, which is just like, sometimes things have to get worse for before them to get better.
True.
And so that's how, so exercise. And then after that, it's just been a desire.
Yes, to, like it just keeps going.
It's great for me. And, you know, when I do stop gymming, I do feel exercise is a direct relation to your mental well-being.
Correct.
So I do know that, okay, if I've been off it, I'm fortunate because I also get to train clients.
Ah.
So if I'm a bit off on my own regimen, I know I'm going in to see a client, I'm going to train a client, and then, you know, I'll be able to still get something in.
Right.
But yeah, I really honor what exercise has done for my life. So
it's incredible.
It's one of my great output, like that's something where an outlet for me.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I think something you've highlighted, people don't realize how damaging it is to just casually tell someone about their weight.
Mm.
And it's been normalized, especially in Zambia. Hey, why na? Like, but you don't know what I'm going through.
Right.
I mean, and it's almost like it's a second greeting. Bwanj, hey, why na? No. You know, that's not right. It's not okay. And people don't realize that they're sending people into this spiral of body dysmorphia.
Mm.
And now they're looking in the mirror and they're thinking, oh my goodness. And it's especially sad when an adult says that to a child.
Mm.
And I've seen that before. And I've had to backhand a couple of people when they've dared to say something about any of my children.
Right.
And I'm like, no, you're not going to do that. Right. You're not going to leave me with a child who's wrecked and thinking, oh my goodness, I'm fat or I'm this or I'm that. And that's not right.
Yeah.
And I think we need to make it known that it's not okay.
Right.
To meet a person and figure, oh, I have the right to tell them what I think. Mm. And half the time, you're like, do you own a mirror?
Mm.
You know, before you tell me about me, like, I could buy you a mirror and then if you really see yourself.
Amazing. Yeah, you know, there's the popular one that says, if you're going to be anything, be kind or something like that. And you know, how are you is probably the better way to.
Exactly.
And it's seeking to understand where somebody actually is. And in that, you'll know whether you have comfort levels to be able to discuss. And,
correct.
You know, and sometimes people volunteer it like, look at me. I'm just gaining
exactly.
weight. Exactly. And I feel like let somebody open rather than you. Just so many underlying things that you could have, you have no idea how much someone is going through. So, yeah, I'm an advocate for... Don't say that. Don't ask those.
It's not right.
Kind of questions. And you know, I'm on the small spectrum, so I'm also an advocate for small girls because obviously, they also get it.
Petite individuals.
They get it, and they're like, yeah, no, we feel like we're not even allowed to say anything after all. We're not the bigger.
How dare you?
We're not struggling with shedding weight, but people like me who have been through it, it's the same battle. Yeah. It's very difficult to leave your house and you don't feel yourself or you don't feel good about yourself.
Exactly.
And so whether you lie on this side of the scale or this side of the scale, it, you know, it doesn't matter. It's the human being at the end of the day. True. So, and what's causing that gain or loss is more important than the actual kilos, you know. So I think that people need to really be pursuing the human being behind the struggle. And then connect with that rather than what's being presented.
Yeah, I should be writing notes. That's very deep. That's extremely deep. And I know you've spoken about enduring in the career, and I know for a fact that music isn't the easiest of careers.
No.
Especially in this beautiful land of work and joy, in unity. What advice would you give to someone? And obviously with a bias towards music, but general advice on excelling in their career. Like, what would you say to a person who says, ah, man, this is tough?
Don't be lazy. Yeah. Because I've experienced it. I've experienced, there's a difference between just being like tired.
Right.
Because, you know, you keep trying and you keep trying. And then there's just where you don't want to accept that you've actually given up. And you're making the same excuses, and you're actually just being lazy.
Right.
And you don't actually want to try and try hard. And I've been guilty of it.
Yeah.
So I know what it's like. And that would be the first thing. And the second thing for me, which is just, you know, other than this, like, be authentic. You know what I mean? Like, really pursue what you really want to be and who you really are, you know, because I think like people are not pursuing themselves enough, you know, like, I really need to check in with myself. Like, do I really want to be doing this anymore?
Right.
You know, as opposed to going with trends or, you know, and to be fair, for me, the whole like just get on the bandwagon is a form of laziness because you're not creating because you enjoy something or you believe in something or you have a vision for something. You're doing it just to kind of stay relevant or
to fit in.
You're
scared to be different.
And with art, it's a big thing.
It is.
Yeah, it is a big thing because, you know, trends are like a big deal now.
True.
You know, and everybody has to kind of be doing one thing, and then there has to be a switch, then we can all go and do this other thing.
This is the style. This is it, you know?
And so when you spoke about like what my genre is when you were doing the intro, for me, I've always been like, be authentic to yourself. My authenticity to myself is that I will literally try anything.
Right.
Because I just feel like I'm limitless in that area. And who knows what will bring me the most ultimate joy. Maybe it's a country song.
Correct.
You know, maybe a country record. And I'll be like, wow, this really, you know, sent me somewhere where I've never been.
And I never has parody.
Yeah, you never has parody. Yeah. And then it's about honoring your journey. You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, you want to hang things up and be like, yeah, you know, I gave it all I got. And I'm happy for it. When I look at my catalog, I am well pleased with like what
you didn't sell yourself short. Yeah. You didn't cheat yourself out of expressing yourself as an artist. And I think that's so important. Everybody wants to be like so and so, but like, why can't you be the person who people want to be like? And a lot of times it's, to your point, it's laziness. It's fashionable. Everybody's doing this. We've seen people switch careers. Not because they have a passion for that career, but because, everybody's becoming this now. Like, let's all go and let's all sign up. No careers mentioned. But yeah, it's a trend now. I've also got my... okay.
Yeah.
Like you. Okay. Yeah, you've got the books, but it's not your sweet spot. It's not where you were built to be. And so you'll always be like a cheap imitation of people who actually have a vocation for that.
Right. And I feel that, you know, the best trend you can set is to remind people to find themselves.
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, you speak about, oh yeah, you know, why you inspiring somebody. I'd rather not inspire somebody to be like me.
Right.
I'd rather that they see me and they say she pursued herself and she was so authentic. And I need to think about whether I'm doing that.
Right. Right.
So who am I? And find myself and then be like, yeah, I don't want to just copy paste what Salma did.
Right.
I want to be able to be like, huh, okay. She's decided that this is her lane.
Yes.
This is how she's doing it. I've watched her story. This is how she executed. And I'm not just going to go and put on a Salma suit right after this. No, I'm going to figure out what that means in my story.
Right.
And how I can... And I think that that's better than otherwise, you know, it's just like, it makes the world so much more interesting.
True.
We don't need 100 Salmas.
No.
We don't.
Each person brings this uniqueness to the equation and we benefit from what they bring to the conversation and their unique experiences, their background, and all of that adds up and then crystallizes into them becoming truly authentic. And I must say, you've stayed true to who you are.
Thank you.
And that's really inspiring.
Thank you.
And I like, my takeaway from that is I should look at you and say, ah, she did it her way. I must do it my way too. And chase that down. Yeah. So let's talk about the big 40. What does it mean to be 40?
Oh, Kamisa. Life better begin. That's all I say. Life better
the
begin.
Fourth floor.
I'm excited for it. I've never shied away from aging. You know, boys like, why do you say so much? You know, some of my schoolmates are like, hey, shh, don't say that don't so loud. Why are you screaming it on the rooftops? I tell people I was in the same class as you. Now they're going to know.
Now they'll know.
Now they'll know. Yeah, no, I'm excited. I think ever since my 21st birthday, I've just been excited about every single milestone, like 21, and then you're like, oh, 25, it's like Jubilee, and then, you know, 30, and then so yeah, no, I'm excited about 40. I'm excited about what it means for me as a woman.
Yeah,
I feel like the 40s are defining in their own way, and I'm just excited to see, like, you know, it's going to be a decade of a lot of change, you know, and not from just myself, but my surroundings.
Right.
You know, my husband and I will like clock 20 years in before I'm 50, like in this next decade, we're going to make 20 years in marriage. Like our son is going to be in university, you know, the other one is also going to finish high school. You know, my girls are going to mature into these young ladies. They're going to become their own people. Career-wise, I'm just excited that I'm at a different level of maturity when it comes to handling my professional careers. I'm like, oh, you know, there's so much space to still be shared, you know. And then, yes, like back to community, knowing that there's so many other women where we're just like, yeah, we can exchange notes about this very interesting season, you know, in our becoming. But I'm in the pursuit of God more.
I like that.
And my 40s, I feel, are going to be where it's like, yeah, I desire for my faith and my pursuit of Christ to be at a different level. You know, the last few years have kind of been priming to that. And even my life and the things that have happened have pushed me sometimes in the comfortable ways, which is nice. And, oh, yeah, I'm happy to be doing this. And then it also in the not so comfortable ways. And I've had to take inventory and look at myself and be like, okay, I was posting this morning because I saw somebody that had posted, there's a young man I follow on YouTube and he just prays for people every day. Like he just puts up a prayer for people every day. And he said that, peace is not the absence of trouble. It's the presence of God.
Oh, I like that.
And I was just like, yeah,
I like that.
I know that my 40s are going to be very kind of like a revelation decade, you know, and it'll set me up for unexplainable peace for the rest of my life. So I'm very optimistic about my 40s.
Right. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Love to hear it. And how do you go off and balance career, raising kids, and also being a wife?
Support. Support. You know, if it's boils down to just having a husband who's willing to help you do the dishes when you're overwhelmed, and, you know, doing the school run, that in itself is just like, you know, we don't have an archaic mindset about what marriage should look like, you know. So that partnership and support. And then, just like I said, you know, I'm really grateful for family. I'm grateful for friends, to know that you can have something that knocks on your door and asks you to be there at 8 in the morning. Right. And your parents or your aunts or your cousins are willing to be like, drop them off, you know. And and then just the self-care, you know, whether it's exercise, whether it's the ability to be in an environment where you can say, I'm too exhausted to do anything, and people understand you as opposed to judge you. That's helped a lot. It's helped a lot to be able to just be like, I'm allowed to not be superwoman.
Right.
And that's made it easier for me, where it's like, I'm allowed to be tired.
Yeah.
And safe spaces. That's what's made it easy.
If you had the opportunity to say one thing to a person who's facing mental health challenges, especially, because I noticed you're very passionate about that, what advice would you give to a person who's really struggling right now?
Find a safe space. Talk to somebody. I know it sounds like the, you know, kind of
sounds
like
cliche, but it's the cliche, it's real
thing to say. But if it doesn't get out, it doesn't go anywhere and doesn't help you. So you need to be able to trust that there's people who are out there to help you, you know. And sometimes closer to home feels safest, because, you know, you're like, there's you know, a familiarity. But if you go to somebody who's a professional, you know, they're not biased. They're going to help you navigate something without feeling sorry for you or being emotionally attached to you. And so a good balance of that is great. Like, it's good. It's important to let your family and friends know that you're going through something, but they don't necessarily have to be the people that you speak to.
Right.
And we're all different, like, in that sense. You know, you find what works for you. But you can't do anything about it if you don't get it out. So I think that that's the most important thing for people to do when it comes to their, and it's okay, you know, it's not, people are not, I think now more like, I'm in the people helping business. I see that people are more open to wanting to speak to somebody about their issues, and not just to vent, but to navigate, to truly come and say, I'm here for tools. Like, these are my, this is my stuff.
Right.
And it's so much stuff.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to sort it out and figure out how to move forward. And again, it's a very confronting process, because now you're like, so I really have to have that conversation, huh? You know, time, place, you know, mood. Right. How do I figure this out?
Right.
But, you know, once something comes to the front of your mind, it's like, you're like, now I really have to, you know, to push it far back where it got pulled from becomes more difficult. And it allows you that opportunity to now just deal with it. So, I think people should just find somebody to talk to.
Got you. One last question. 100 years from now, people look back. How would you like to be remembered?
As kind.
That's it,
Human kindness.
Ah.
That's all I want to be remembered as.
A kind person who was kind to everybody she met.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Appreciate that. Thank you so much for taking time out, Zalma.
Thanks
It's been great chatting with you.
It's been amazing.
Yeah, it's been wonderful catching up. We've got to see a little more about you that we didn't know. And we are enriched. This has been...
Thank you.
Yeah, quite
an You're an incredible show. Host.
Thank you kindly. I appreciate that. I hope my boss is listening. It's been simply amazing chatting with Salma Skye. She's told us about her background. She's told us what has shaped and molded her over the years. She's told us what's important to her. But above all else, she's told us the secret to her success, kindness. I hope you're going to go out there and be kind to people. And I hope you're going to share this kindness as far and as widely as you possibly can. Nkwazi Unfiltered is a place where we do just that. We unfilter people whom we think we know, but we get to know a little bit more about them, and it makes us know what makes them tick. We can't wait to host you on Nkwazi Unfiltered. Thanks for watching.